Saluton from BA. This is a Rorschach multilateral update from the 21st of October 2025, a summary of what's going down in the world's major multilateral institutions. To begin this week, on Friday the 17th, a new report from the UN Development Programme found that around 900 million people are living in poverty. To make things worse, almost 8 out of 10 are in regions hit by climate-related threats. It said more than 500 million face at least two kinds of hazards, while about 300 million deal with three or four at once. Most of those affected live in South Asia and Sub-Saharan Africa. The findings stress that poverty and environmental pressures are deeply connected, calling for climate and development efforts to work together. On Thursday the 16th, Venezuela formally asked the United Nations Security Council to declare a series of United States-led military strikes off its coast illegal. The letter from Venezuela's UN ambassador said at least 27 people were killed in attacks on civilian-type vessels in Caribbean waters and demanded the Council reaffirm Venezuela's sovereignty. However, the request faces little chance of action given that the US holds a veto at the Council. Meanwhile, the US defended the operations as self-defense under international law. In defense, on Wednesday the 15th, two of NATO's newest members, Finland and Sweden, announced they'll start buying more US-made weapons to send to Ukraine, as Western military support for the country has notably dropped. Some NATO members are stepping up their contributions, while others are being called out for doing too little. Several NATO members, like Poland and the Baltic states, have sharply increased defense spending, with Poland leading at over 4% of GDP. In contrast, Western European nations such as Spain, Italy, and Belgium remain more hesitant. On the same day, the African Union suspended Madagascar's membership after soldiers seized power and forced the president out of office. The move came after weeks of demonstrations led mostly by young people angry over unemployment, corruption, and poor living conditions. Following the coup, a key figure in the army announced he would take over as interim president. On Wednesday the 15th, the UN Secretary General warned that the world's humanitarian system is stretched to the breaking point. He said that while the need for aid has never been higher, the money coming in keeps shrinking, leaving the UN struggling to keep up. To tackle this, the organization is rolling out its UNAT initiative, meant to streamline operations, rely more on data, and cut costs by up to 20% in its 2026 budget. In Europe, on Saturday the 18th, Austria announced it would support the European Union's 19th package of sanctions against Russia, clearing a key bureaucratic blocker ahead of the EU foreign ministers' meeting. Austria had been resisting the sanctions package due to its bank's connections with Russia and the limits that the sanctions would put on financial agreements with the country. The proposed measures include an accelerated ban on Russian liquefied natural gas imports starting in early 2027. In other news, on Wednesday the 15th, judges at the International Criminal Court ruled that the chief prosecutor must be removed from the case against former Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte because of a potential conflict of interest. The panel said that even though they don't believe he is actually biased, a fair-minded observer might conclude there is a risk of bias due to his prior role representing victims of the alleged crimes. The case will go forward with a deputy prosecutor instead. For context, Duterte was arrested earlier this year on an International Criminal Court warrant for alleged crimes against humanity tied to his violent anti-drug campaign. He was later transferred to The Hague to face charges, marking a historic moment as one of the few former heads of state to be taken into international custody. Meanwhile, on Friday the 17th, the International Labour Organization hosted a regional meeting in Damascus, bringing together governments, employers, and workers from Syria and nearby countries. The group agreed on a new framework to coordinate labour and migration policies as the region works toward rebuilding. Key goals include helping refugees and returnees find decent jobs, improving worker protections, and recognizing skills across borders. Syria faces immense rebuilding needs after years of war that devastated cities, infrastructure, and essential services. The economy remains crippled, with widespread poverty and limited access to electricity, healthcare, and clean water. International sanctions, political isolation, and ongoing instability have made large-scale reconstruction difficult, leaving much of the country dependent on humanitarian aid. In health news, on Wednesday the 15th, UNICEF warned that over 200,000 children in eastern Afghanistan are at serious risk of diseases like acute watery diarrhea after a strong earthquake wrecked water systems and sanitation facilities. The quake damaged more than 100 water sources and left most families without clean toilets, forcing many to resort to unsafe practices. Afghanistan's healthcare system remains fragile, heavily reliant on foreign aid and NGOs to operate clinics and hospitals. Many facilities face shortages of medicine, equipment, and trained staff, especially in rural areas. Since the Taliban's return to power, international funding cuts and restrictions on women's work have further strained access to care. Still in health, on Friday the 17th, the World Health Organization joined the World Bank and Japan to launch the Health Works Leaders Coalition, a global partnership focused on boosting investment in health systems. The group brings together government officials, business leaders, and global health organizations to link stronger healthcare and job creation. Instead of providing direct funding, it aims to coordinate support for national health plans in over 20 countries. The initiative also pushes countries to rely more on domestic investment rather than foreign aid. Let's wrap up this edition with some news from East Asia. On Thursday the 16th, members of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, or ASEAN, signed off on a new regional energy plan that sets a target for renewables to make up 45% of total electricity by 2030. The agreement also aims to have green energy supply nearly a third of the region's total consumption, while cutting energy intensity by about 40% from 2005 levels. Compared to earlier goals, this is a big jump in ambition. Still, experts say uneven policies, financial limits, and weak infrastructure could slow down progress. ASEAN countries have strengthened coordination overall through initiatives like the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership and efforts to deepen supply chain integration. While members share goals of boosting trade and investment, differences in development levels and national interests sometimes slow progress. On another note, on Friday the 17th, the International Organization for Migration said the number of people displaced in Haiti has hit an all-time high of 1.4 million, up more than a third since late last year. The sharp rise comes as gang violence spreads far beyond Port-au-Prince into central and northern regions. Most of those forced from their homes, many of them women and children, are crowding into host families or makeshift shelters. In finance, on Wednesday the 15th, the Inter-American Development Bank approved a $40 million loan to help Ecuador improve its agricultural public services. The project will upgrade research centers, modernize data systems, and strengthen pest control and food safety programs managed by the Agriculture and Livestock Ministries. It's expected to directly support over 13,000 producers, including many women, indigenous, and Afro-Ecuadorian farmers. On Thursday the 16th, Armenia reached a staff-level agreement with the International Monetary Fund, or IMF, to complete the latest review of its current economic program and begin a new three-year arrangement. The plan is meant to help the country manage financial risks and strengthen public finances. It focuses on improving revenue collection, maintaining sustainable debt levels, and continuing reforms that make the economy more resilient. The IMF said Armenia's overall performance remains solid despite ongoing external challenges. And that's it for this week. Thank you for joining us. This past Saturday, we held a trial of a new kind of gathering. Highly structured, but radically equal, very wild. No keynote speakers, no talking heads. Those who join decide who they talk to, but without knowing the identity of who they will meet, they propose and decide what they will discuss. Like we said, wild. anyway, curious? If so, check the show notes. And if you're interested, we can help you hold one at the UN headquarters in New York or halfway between NATO headquarters and the European Commission. So maybe around Evere Station in Brussels. See you next week.